Chapter 2. Times, and those who may sit conscience worries into habitual violation of the maxim, are imbeciles and nuisances. It is strong language, but true. None of us could live with an habitual truth-teller, but thank goodness none of us has to. An habitual truth-teller is simply an impossible creature. He does not exist. He never has existed. Of course there are people who think they never lie, but it is not so, and this ignorance is one of the very things that shame our so-called civilization. Everybody lies every day, every hour, awake, asleep, in his dreams, in his joy, in his mourning. If he keeps his tongue still, his hands, his feet, his eyes, his attitude, will convey deception and purposely. Even in sermons, but that is a platitude. In a far country, where I once lived, the ladies used to go around paying calls, under the humane and kindly pretense of wanting to see each other, and when they returned home, they would cry out with a glad voice, saying, "We made 16 calls and found 14 of them out," not meaning that they found out anything important against the 14. No, that was only a colloquial phrase to signify that they were not at home, and their manner of saying it expressed their lively satisfaction in that fact. Now their pretense of wanting to see the 14 and the other two whom they had been less lucky with was that commonest and mildest form of lying which is sufficiently described as a deflection from the truth. Is it justifiable? Most certainly. It is beautiful, it is noble, for its object is not to reap profit, but to convey a pleasure to the 16. The iron-souled truth-monger would plainly manifest, or even utter the fact, that he didn't want to see those people, and he would be an ass, and inflict totally unnecessary pain. And next, those ladies in that far country, but never mind, they had a thousand pleasant ways of lying, that grew out of gentle impulses, and were a credit to their intelligence, and an honor to their hearts. Let the particulars go. The men in that far country were liars, every one. Their mere howdy-do was a lie, because they didn't care how you did, except they were undertakers. To the ordinary inquirer you lied in return, for you made no conscientious diagnostic of your case, but answered at random, and usually missed it considerably. You lied to the undertaker, and said your health was failing, a wholly commendable lie, since it cost you nothing, and pleased the other man. If a stranger called and interrupted you, you said with your hearty tongue, "I'm glad to see you," and said with your heartier soul, "I wish you were with the cannibals," and it was dinner time. When he went, you said regretfully, "Must you go?" and followed it with a "all again." But you did no harm, for you did not deceive anybody, nor inflict any hurt, whereas the truth would have made you both unhappy. I think that all this courteous lying is a sweet and loving art, and should be cultivated. The highest perfection of politeness is only a beautiful edifice, built, from the base to the dome, of graceful and gilded forms of charitable and unselfish lying. What I bemoan is the growing prevalence of the brutal truth. Let us do what we can to eradicate it. An injurious truth has no merit over an injurious lie. Neither should ever be uttered. The man who speaks an injurious truth lest his soul be not saved, if he do otherwise, should reflect that that sort of a soul is not strictly worth saving. The man who tells a lie, to help a poor devil out of trouble, is one of whom the angels doubtless say, "Lo, here is an heroic soul who casts his own welfare in jeopardy to succor his neighbors. Let us exalt this magnanimous liar." An injurious lie is an uncommendable thing, and so, also, and in the same degree, is an injurious truth a fact that is recognized by the law of libel. Among other common lies, we have the silent lie, the deception which one conveys by simply keeping still and concealing the truth. Many obstinate truth-mongers indulge in this dissipation, imagining that if they speak no lie, they lie not at all. In that far country where I once lived, there was a lovely spirit, a lady whose impulses were always high and pure, and whose character answered to them. One day I was there at dinner, and remarked, in a general way, that we are all liars. She was amazed, and said, not all, it was before Enofor's time. So I did not make the response which would naturally follow in our day, but frankly said, yes, all we are all liars. There are no exceptions. She looked almost offended. Why, do you include me? Question mark. See, certainly, I said. I think you even rank as an expert. She said SHSH, the children. So the subject was changed in deference to the children's presence, and we went on talking about other things. But as soon as the young people were out of the way, the lady came warmly back to the matter and said, I have made a rule of my life, to never tell a lie, and I have never departed from it in a single instance. I said, I don't mean the least harm or disrespect, but really you have been lying like smoke ever since I've been sitting here. It has caused me a good deal of pain, because I'm not used to it. She required of me an instance, just a single instance. So I said, L, here is the unfilled duplicate of the blank, which the Oakland Hospital people sent to you by the hand of the sick nurse, when she came here to nurse your little nephew through his dangerous illness. This blank asks all manners of questions, as to the conduct of that sick nurse. Did she ever sleep on her watch? Did she ever forget to give the medicine? Apostrophe and so forth and so on. You are warned to be very careful and explicit in your answers, for the welfare of the service requires that the nurses be promptly fined, or otherwise punished for derelictions. You told me you were perfectly delighted with this nurse, that as he had 1,000 perfections and only one fault. You found you never could depend on her wrapping Johnny up half sufficiently, while he waited in a chilly chair for her to rearrange the warm bed. You filled up the duplicate of this paper, and sent it back to the hospital by the hand of the nurse. How did you answer this question? Was the nurse at any time guilty of a negligence which was likely to result in the patient's taking cold? Apostrophe apostrophe come, everything is decided by a bet here in California. $10 to 10 cents you lied when you answered that question. She said, I didn't, I left it blank. So you have told a silent lie, you have left it to be inferred that you had no fault to find in that matter. She said, oh, was that a lie? And how could I mention her one single fault, and she is so good? It would have been cruel. I said, one ought always to lie when one can do good by it. Your impulse was right, but your judgment was crude. This comes of unintelligent practice. Now observe the results of this inexpert deflection of yours. You know Mr. Jones Willie is lying very low with scarlet fever. Well, your recommendation was so enthusiastic that that girl is there nursing him, and the worn-out family have all been trustingly sound asleep for the last 14 hours, leaving their darling with full confidence in those fatal hands, because you, like young George Washington, have a repute. However, if you are not going to have anything to do, I will come around tomorrow, and we'll attend the funeral together, for, of course, you'll naturally feel a peculiar interest in Willie's case as personally one, in fact, as the undertaker. But that was not all lost. Before I was halfway through, she was in a carriage, and making 30 miles an hour toward the Jones mansion, to save what was left of Willie, and tell all she knew about the deadly nurse. All of which was unnecessary, as Willie wasn't sick. I had been lying myself. But that same day, all the same, she sent a line to the hospital which filled up the neglected blank, and stated the facts too, in the squarest possible manner. Now, you see, this lady's fault was not in lying, but in lying injudiciously. She should have told the truth there, and made it up to the nurse with a fraudulent compliment further along in the paper. She could have said, in one respect this sick nurse's perfection when she is on the watch, she never snores. Almost any little pleasant lie would have taken the sting out of that troublesome, but necessary expression of the truth. Lying is universal, we all do it. Therefore, the wise thing is for us diligently to train ourselves to lie thoughtfully, judiciously, to lie with a good object, and not an evil one, to lie for others' advantage, and not our own, to lie healingly, charitably, humanely, not cruelly, hurtfully, maliciously, to lie gracefully and graciously, not awkwardly and clumsily, to lie firmly, frankly, squarely, with head erect, not haltingly, tortuously, with pusillanimous mien, as being ashamed of our high calling. Then shall we be rid of the rank and pestilent truth that is rotting the land. Then shall we be great, and good and beautiful, and worthy dwellers in a world where even benign nature habitually lies, except when she promises execrable weather. Then but am I, but a new and feeble student in this gracious art. I cannot instruct this club. Joking aside, I think there is much need of wise examination into what sorts of lies are best and wholesomest to be indulged, seeing we must all lie, and we do all lie, and what sorts it may be best to avoid, and this is a thing which I feel I can confidently put into the hands of this experienced club, a ripe body, who may be termed, in this regard, and without undue flattery, old masters. End of Project Gutenberg, a text on the decay of the art of lying, by Twain. Lying by Gutenberg Edition.